on this edition of the Car Jam podcast.
36, 38 degrees the whole time. Never put any water in it.
Put some petrol in, though.
Thousands of pounds worth of petrol.
Oh, well done.
I have travelled in probably about 25 hearses.
Have you?
And never once been dead.
We claim it's the world's first motor museum.
Is this like the UK's oldest pub? There seem to be more than one of them.
There's an asterisk to, the, yes, to that, yeah.
Any idea what that means, Mike?
A bit of a traffic jam, I think.
Well, here we are again, gathered at the NEC Temple of Classic Motoring for the finale of Car Chum's wholesome coverage of the Classic Motor Show 2023. All is not well, though, on the show floor. What's that over there?
Oi.
This is the beast, Tony.
It's the beast?
It's built by John Dodd.
Is it the beast? There is only one beast, isn't
yes.
there? Okay.
This is, well, there's other race cars called, such as, you know, the Beast of Turin.
Yeah.
But this is the
Spitfire-powered.
Spitfire, yeah. Merlin tank
yes.
engine.
Oh.
27-litre, I think it is.
So not the Spitfire engine, but it's the same sort of engine, isn't it?
You can say Spitfire, okay. I think, but I believe it's a Meteor tank engine. Yeah, it's about 27 litres. It still has the Rolls-Royce grille. It's famously Rolls-Royce sued.
Yeah.
Because John Dodd had put a grill on a car that wasn't a Rolls-Royce.
Yes. It had a Rolls-Royce engine in it.
And I think
that was the hook, wasn't it?
I think I'm correct in saying that was part of the reason he moved to Spain, because he had such grief in the UK with the car. The interesting thing here is it was originally a kind of Sahara sandy colour, and it's been repainted.
Yes, it was. It was twin-toned sort of beigey cream. Yeah, now it's
a really nice shade of sort of dark grey, metallic.
Grey, yeah.
Let's go with gunmetal.
Yeah, gunmetal, that'll do. I've never seen it. I've always wanted to.
I've got a feeling it started out as a Capri and then he rebodied it into the sort of Rolls-Royce shooting brake.
He was going to supercharge it. That's right. Weren't the Spitfire engines supercharged and the tank engines weren't? Was that maybe that's it, but it was
possibly
just too much. It was powerful.
I don't know, it gets ridiculously low fuel economy that's sort of in the, you know, gallons per mile. but a stunning car.
What an incredible car. Hello. Yeah, Tony from Car Chum. You're Bryn Jones. So
yes.
What is your function at Bewley?
I am the Marketing and Communications Officer for the National Motor Museum at Bewley. So it's my role to tell the world about all the fascinating and wonderful cars that we've got at Bewley in the New Forest in Hampshire. So,
yeah, Mike, I can tell you, he works in comms. The word fascinating appeared in there. Beautiful cars. He got the product name in.
Everything but the postcode there. Well done, Brett.
The website as well, which is that nationalmotormuseum.org.uk. You need to look at that as well. It's got a wealth of information. Because I think that people don't appreciate that in addition to the actual museum where we've got the cars, and we've got about 290 cars in the museum, we've got a collection centre that's got about 1.9 million artefacts of motoring heritage, and a huge film archive, photographic library as well. So a huge sort of archive, all devoted to the history of motoring. So the museum started with the Lord Montagu, as a homage to his father. Edward Lord Montagu started the museum in the foyer of Palace House, his home at Bewley, and then it developed from there, from three cars in his foyer to another sort of additional sort of building, and then in 1972, which we've just celebrated for 50th anniversary, a purpose-built motor museum was built in the grounds.
And doesn't that make it, I think, the oldest motor museum, is that right?
Yes.
There's some statistic.
Well, we claim it's kind of the world's world's first motor museum, but there was a more temporary one in London, I think, just before
is
then.
Is this like the UK's oldest pub? There seem to be more than one of them.
There's an asterisk to, yes, to that. Yeah.
So what are the cars you've got on the stand here?
Right, well, we've been very, very busy at the Classic Motor Show at the NEC. We've had world land speed record vehicles on the stand, the Sunbeam 350 horsepower and the Sunbeam 1000 horsepower. And they were both manufactured at in Wolverhampton in the Sunbeam. So in a way we're bringing back the, you know, the Sunbeam vehicles to the Midlands.
What age are these vehicles?
So the 350 broke the land speed record in around 1924, but the 1,000 horsepower broke the 200 mile per hour land speed record in 1927, and we're now restoring this vehicle in order to take it back to Daytona Beach in Florida in America in order to recreate the scene. So our aim is to restore it and raise funds in order to restore it so that it can go back there.
Have you found someone willing to drive it yet?
Mike, have you got your calendar on you?
I got my driving licence somewhere.
I think we're looking for somebody with a deep pocket that's also very enthusiastic and also probably a little bit brave as well.
I can bring one of those three qualities.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not the brave and the deep pocket.
So what's been really popular here is that we've got one of the V12 engines from the Sunbeam 1000 here as well, so people who are really into their engines and things can sort of appreciate, you know, the actual power that was behind kind of the Sunbeam 1000, because, you know, one engine at the front, one at the back, and when Seagrave drove the vehicle at Daytona Beach, he had to do two passes and in order to sort of justify the land speed record. And the second pass, the chain was red hot and the cable brakes failed. And in order to slow down, he had to drift into the sea in order to slow down the vehicle. So it's like kind of, you know, really kind of, you know, seat of your pants kind of thing.
And a reminder, still looking for that driver.
Yes.
to recreate this.
Mike, do you remember on the way up on the M40, you remember when the traffic backed back suddenly?
And you started drifting into the ocean?
Yeah. You know, I went into the puddles to slow down. It's the same effect. You'll be fine with it.
You're too tall for this car.
So, yes, once it completed its land speed record, it came back to Britain. And they put it in the shop front of Selfridges in London. It became a celebrity car, you know, and it has been a celebrity car here at this show. It's been kind of drawing crowds, you know, it's dying down now on Sunday evening, but it's been absolutely packed here all weekend, so I've been really pleased with our
what's really intrigued
here.
People, I was here on the Friday, and the amount of people who are getting their heads underneath and looking at that huge chassis, which is, it looks like about 9-10 inches deep chassis rails on that thing. It's like a bus underneath, isn't it?
It's very distinctive, obviously red in colour, sort of nicknamed the Slug in Britain, Mystery in America. So it's very distinctive vehicle, really, and it's huge, absolutely massive. So it's been well received here at the show.
And of course, you go down to Bewley, you can see the other record cars lined up next to it, the Bluebird and the
Golden Arrow. Yes.
And, So definitely.
What's the next big exciting thing then for Bewley?
Well, we've got a headline exhibition on at the moment that we're obviously renowned for for historical cars, but we're looking at actually the kind of the future of motoring. Obviously, we're at a point in time where engines are changing, electric vehicles and what have you, but people don't realise that even at the start of motoring, there was a debate over how to power vehicles. Electric vehicles are not a new thing. You know, we've got one of the earliest electric vehicle in this exhibition called Motopia at the museum, along with hydrogen cars, the Sinclair C5, which at the time, you know, people thought people were a little bit bonkers to be driving that, but now...
having ridden one relatively recently, they were correct in the bonkers.
But now we've got, you know, mopeds and that kind of thing, so... it's not kind of... It was a little bit before its time. But those are the kind of things that we've got in this present exhibition. So that'll be at Bewley until April. and then we're sort of going to redevelop a little bit of the museum, and the entrance lobby is going to be changed a little bit as well. So things are changing down at Bewley.
Oh, well, things are changing. I know. I still mourn the loss of wheels.
Well, yes, we're looking at the replacement of that.
And, well, you need to, because Bewley's not Bewley without wheels, you know.
Well, yeah. I'm not commenting on the future of wheels, but then we will be using that.
When's it coming back, Bryn?
We will be looking at using that space in the future, yes. But, yeah, hopefully things will be changing. Obviously, it takes time and takes money, and as a charity, we kind of, you know, want to try and raise funds. The Sunbeam 1000 campaign is part of that effort, really, to raise awareness of the museum and to raise funds of the museum as well.
Brilliant. Let's get back down to Bewley again, Tony. Soon. Stag Owners Club. Biggest misconception about the stag. Mm-hmm. People think it's a sports car, I guess. Well, no, in all seriousness, it's a GT.
I was going to say, as we approach the stand, I feel like I'm overheating.
No, I wouldn't do that. You're likely to be able to carry that microphone without needing to put it in your hand. So, Stag Owners Club, they've got three lovely stags on the stand. Yellow, white and blue, or green.
It's mimosa yellow, is it
this
not?
This is mimosa, I think.
Yes. Oh, look under that bonnet.
Well, it's stunning. This is a stag that's completely chromed under the bonnet. Everything that can be chromed is.
That's a solid effort, isn't it? Look at that. All the dashpots of the carburetor, the air intakes, the rocker covers, or cam covers, aren't they, on this, of course, overhead cam. But even chunks of the alternator in chrome.
The HT leads are also mimosa yellow, matching the paintwork. It's got an upgraded radiator, I notice.
Yeah, useful for the aforementioned issue. Hang on, we're attracting attention. Let's go.
You made
the mistake, gentlemen, of looking. We're from the Carchon podcast, and we're talking about stags, because we're on the stag stand. And so you, Mick Moore?
Yes. I'm Mick Moore, yes.
What do you want?
Just wearing someone else's badge for a laugh.
Is one of them yours?
This one here.
The mimosa. You've done a nice job chroming.
Right, thank you very much.
Do you like chrome?
Obviously, I should think we do.
Why the stag?
I had him when I was a youngster, but I've had this one 22 years. Oh. So, yeah, I just enjoy it. The club's brilliant. Have a lot of fun with all my mates and that. And, yeah, great.
What do you do with the car? I drive it. Where do you drive it?
Go to shows, been all over Europe with it.
Oh, really?
Yes. Done 4,500 miles in one trip in 17. That does get used.
What was it like when you first got it? I'm guessing not quite as nice as it is now.
It was pretty good.
Was it?
Yes, it was pretty good. But I've just improved it over the years.
So now, everybody's, and I hate to say it, but everybody says overheating with a stag. Now, this has been cured, hasn't it? You've found ways of getting around it that they no longer suffer from it, but there's still the myth persists.
Yes, it does. Everyone comes up and goes, oh, yeah, these overheat. You know, but basically, when the cars were made, they left a load of casting sand in the blocks. And that took a long while to realise what that was. And we still find stags now when you rebuild them. They've got loads of casting sand in the block.
But now they don't overheat. They're perfectly reliable as much as any other Triumph. Is that correct?
Yes.
And, so that myth needs to be put to sleep.
When I'd done that 4,500 miles, that was we went to Switzerland for the ESM. I went down Stelvio Pass, down through the Italian Riviera, and down to southern Spain and back. It's 36, 38 degrees the whole time. Never put any water in it. 1 litre of oil.
Put some petrol in, though.
£1,000 worth of petrol.
Oh, well done.
Thank you very much.
So, Tony, there's two cars at the show that I really want you to see. And the first one's here on the Alvis stand. And it's this incredible black and red Alvis two-door. What's your initial impression on this car? Because I absolutely adore it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stunning motor car, isn't it? It's a stunning motor car that has original vintage wire wheels, spats at the back, a whole stack of chrome at the front, including headlights that are much, much larger than a football. How's that for a description? What is it?
It's a 1936 Alvis 3.5 litre with Bertelli two-door coupe saloon short chassis tourer body. And it's one of one. Stunning car they built one of.
And it is beautiful, yeah.
I walked around it earlier. I cannot find a bad line on it. I cannot find anything I don't adore about this car. And I don't really know what it is. I think it's just the sum of its parts. It's perfection.
Isn't that true, though? You quite often can't define what it is that you really like. Earlier, when we walked past the Alfa stand, for example, I'm not an Alfa person, but there was something that said, I have to... And we said we're not going to talk about Alfas, yet we did. There was something that drew me onto the stand. I wanted to do it. And obviously, this Alvis is... And I do like Alvises.
Yeah.
They're very special cars. I like the later... You'll know what they're called. I like the later 60s
Alvis. I think that's a TD...
TD, something.
Drop head.
Yeah. They're beautiful.
Probably
lovely.
TD21, I would imagine, just
a real,
looking at it for a bit.
A real role. Competitor,
yes,
but without the shoutiness,
yes. Yep. But I just find, as I say, I just find this one stunning. And
let's have a little look inside. Yeah, I mean, it's got that individual hand-built character inside. Obviously, a lot of wood, a lot of leather. Got all the hand controls on the steering wheel, of course. Yeah, to advance your timing or retard it. And,
so the chrome, the. The lines, the colours, it's black over dark red. It just looks classy.
I'm a sucker as well for black over dark
every
red.
Every angle.
Black over claret looks.
I do just love it. And now what I'm going to ask you to do is turn around 180 degrees and look at the blue car behind us. And I know you know what this is.
I do. And every true car chum fan should know as well, but is unlikely to, I admit. It's the car that is actually the car chum logo and is probably one of my no, that's too loose a statement. It is one of my favourite cars ever.
It is, of course, the Gordon Keeble GK1. British car, Italian design, American heart. Imagine a Corvette with a stunning Italian body on it. It's been one of my favourite cars forever.
And it's funny because you and I had never really talked about them until we came to design, so this is quite a special moment, came to design the Car Chum logo, and we said, well, what could we put on there that is a beautiful car that isn't instantly recognisable as something? And we came up with the Gordon Keeble. Yeah.
Have you seen a Gordon Keeble in the flesh before? Or
I have. Yeah, no, I've seen them, but they're just a very elegant two-door coupe, very much a 60s look, but I love the tongue-in-cheek logo of the company, the tortoise on the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it's got, what is it, a Chrysler? Is it a Chrysler or Chevy?
It's a Corvette. It's a Corvette 327 V8 in it. Four-speed. Just... everything they got right on this car. It was a hand-built car. They built 103, something like that.
Should we actually get some facts?
Let's actually speak to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah. Someone over
here. Gordon Keeble Owners Club stand.
Someone over here knows all about Gordon Keebles. Who are you, sir?
My name's Len. I'm a member of the Gordon Keeble Club, and I've got chassis 81.
Is this the blue one?
That is not mine.
That is not yours?
No.
Okay. What chassis number is that?
52.
Okay, you see, that's how bespoke these cars are. So
well, everybody recognises the owner of a car by the chassis number. Sounds ridiculous. Not by the registration number or anything.
Are we putting hands up over here? Is this yours?
Yeah.
The blue one is yours.
It is.
When are you going to do the restoration on it? Sorry, that's a joke, because it is absolutely. How long have you had it?
I've owned it for 8 years.
What's the best bit about it?
Oh, the best bit? The effortlessness of it all. Well, until you try and park.
I mean, even the design, I don't want to get...
Design.
I don't want to get too fancy, but the design is effortless, isn't it?
As you will know, he went on to the Alfa Romeos after this. This, I understand, was his first design as a 21-year-old. Mm. First complete design. And, yeah, I made the mistake of going and looking at it.
Yeah, never go and look unless you intend to come home.
Story of my life.
What kind of condition was it in when you got it?
Well, OK, now this gets a bit contentious. As you see it now, largely, but it apparently had been fully rebuilt, which I've now done.
Right, OK.
One of those.
Including the engine last winter.
Right.
What's the most difficult thing about owning it? Is there any downside?
No more than any other car of its kind, no. I mean, it has a few idiosyncrasies, like the two rear spark plugs on the far side. You can't access except from underneath the car. I mean, there are a few wrinkles like that, but you get used to them.
It makes you work for it, for its pleasure.
Unfortunately, I now don't have to get at the spark plugs because it'll probably do 100,000 miles on this set now.
Has the club figured out what the back window's from yet? Because I remember a few years ago, there was a lot of, you know, if we ever need a rear window, we're probably going to have to get them made.
They are made by
Pilkington?
Yeah, Pilkington. So you can order them from Pilkington. I've got a replacement windscreen that I bought from Pilkington's 3 years ago, standing in the garage.
He's still standing, is he? Just checking.
I haven't hit it yet. Because this one is quite sand-pitted, but I haven't got around to installing it yet. So, yeah, they are bespoke, the front and rear screens.
Oh, they are? Okay.
Yeah.
As fascinating as it is, Mike, talking about glass, could I ask a favour?
Depends what it is.
Could I have a sit in it?
Of course you can. Yeah.
Lovely. Could you take me? Well, we need you. Well, you sit in the passenger seat then. Well,
Tony's now walking around to the driver's seat and very gingerly opening the door on this incredibly rare car. I've never seen him take such care. Himself into the seat.
I'll squeeze my legs in, but
it does go back.
Well, no, but
it's as far forward as it will go, and I can just reach the pedal.
There's nothing more annoying, though, than someone adjusting your seat.
Yeah, quite.
No, so I won't do that to you. So what have we got inside? We've got a lovely wood-rimmed steering wheel with the comedic logo in the centre. Beautiful Jaeger instruments, very much of their period. And then, of course, the main flight deck, because it came from Eastleigh, didn't it, the airport?
That's correct, yeah. It was the old Spitfire factory, I understand, yeah.
So the aircraft influence here, very, very clear. Four-speed manual gearbox. Power steering?
No power steering, no, which makes it quite a challenge parking, especially on the radials that it's on now.
True four-seater coupe, though, just about?
Yeah, I think so. A lot more space than many modern cars in the back there.
Well, this is a moment realised for me, because you don't see them very often, even at classic car shows, obviously. So it's wonderful to actually sit in it. So thank you very much for your time.
Welcome.
Third time's the charm, Tony. So I'm looking over here, Tony. I see a large white estate car that I do believe is what they know as a funeral coach.
I was just about to say, all right, Mike, we can go and look at the hearses now if you really want to.
I really do love a hearse.
You do love a hearse?
Do you know, the weird thing is, because I know a few people in the clubs and a few people who own them.
Yeah.
I have travelled in probably about 25 hearses.
Have you?
And never once been dead. There may be some sort of record for being the most amount of time in a hearse and still being alive.
I think it's worth a little description down the side. What is it? It's a Cadillac, isn't it, presumably?
This is a Cadillac.
It's vastly long, obviously.
Imagine late 80s.
What are these things called on the side? They're
Landau bars.
Landau bars. They're the curly bar that used to be on the roof of a coach,
for the fold down. When you had a fold down roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Landau bar was what the roof kind of folded down onto. And it's just a part of tradition.
Yeah.
you know, it harks back to an earlier era, like the coach lamp on
prefer,
the side.
Yeah, I prefer just slightly ahead of that on the what is the ABC pillar. Yeah, a Victorian coach lamp on the side.
Which would light up.
Right, of course it would.
And then some, it's all in the best taste.
Yeah, and then some velour curtains. It's lovely. Should we find someone that owns one of these things?
Actually knows about it. Yeah. It's worth a try.
Hello. Hi, Tony from Carsham. Mike from Carsham.
Tell us a bit about the hearses. Tell us about the club. What's going on?
There's not really any clubs out there for hearses at the minute. It used to be an old club. So me and Nick sort of thought there's a bit of a gap to fill and see who's out there who's the same as us, who really appreciate the hearses, limos, carriages, all stuff like that. This is the first time we've done it this year at the NEC. We are on Facebook. But yeah, it's just to see who's actually out there, who's got the same ideas as us. Nick's actually a funeral director for the Cadillac. He's actually in service still.
Oh, brilliant.
That does actually get used quite, not regular, but he does go out. He's got a few other classics. Again, they are really wanted at the minute because people prefer the personal vintage touch to the funerals. I've got the Granada Mark II hearse. Mm-hmm. I actually use it as a daily runner. That is my everyday car, more or less.
It's good if you want to move a sofa.
Yeah. Well, we moved house recently, so all the furniture went straight in the back. It's just a practical motor.
What's your name and what's the name of the
I'm Callum. The club's called Classic Funeral Vehicles. We've also got Nick Jordan. We've opened it between us. But yeah, it's a bit of a niche sort of hobby, but after this weekend, there's a lot of people the same as us who are really going, oh, yeah, we're really up for it.
Well, look, you're preaching of Carcham, 50% of it likes hearses anyway, so you're in with Mike. Me, I don't get it. I like the vehicles, but I don't get why I would want one. Why would I want one other than to carry a sofa?
Oh, well, you didn't ever know we might need one.
Well, I think I probably do, but I'd rather not.
We've had a lot of people this weekend. They've all just, especially with the Cadillac being here with the door open, they put their head around sort of the curious to see what's inside.
Oh, I'm curious. Yeah.
Something jumps out.
Yeah. Every time you see one of these, you see them on the road, you don't want to look at it, you feel rude. And if you're up close with one, you're normally at a funeral, so you're not too worried about looking at the car. So this weekend, you actually get to have a proper look inside and to see different types of hearses, Irish, English, or American. But it's just a weird niche. I've liked them since I was about 6 years old, so I don't know why. But there's a lot of people out there who just really like them.
Look, it'd be fascinating to actually go round all of them and pick out the differences and difference. I can see the European one is higher and the, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that may get a little niche for our audience. But what are the common parts? I can see some rollers here that let you move the coffin in.
Yeah, you got the rollers. Being an American one, it's all sort of enclosed and it's a bit more private and a bit more plush inside. They really went out on these.
It's very velour-y.
Yeah, it's very very posh. This is a 1991, so it's just retro. But going back to the British hearses, they're just a bit more plain, but old school look. That look is still exactly the same now. You go get a new hearse, the back will be exactly the same as that. As you go back to a 1930s British hearse, it'll still be the same inside.
So the deck where the coffin sits is raised, isn't it? So that you can see it, presumably through the large glass windows at the side. What's underneath?
It's actually a double deck, so you can have two coffins in one go.
Ah.
Same with the Wolseley, that's a double deck.
What about your Granada?
That's a single deck. Being an Irish, there's always a lot smaller. No one really knows why, even today they're built the same. But that deck you see, it actually dips down, unlike the British hearse, which dips up. That only carries one coffin at a time. But this was just in the morning, you go do the one on top, get rid of it, throw the one on top again, jump
swap
on the
them over
one.
In a lay-by.
Yes, a bit of money, yeah.
Is yours a Duffy?
Duffy build, yeah. There's only two in the UK of them, that I know of, including that one.
Wow.
We've got a lot of friends over in Ireland, and they're really into the Duffys. really rare car.
See, Tony obviously doesn't understand. Let me put it to you this way.
Yeah.
Coach-built car, very unusual.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Generally
sure.
Built to a very high standard.
Yeah.
Used sparingly, a low mileage, and maintained perfectly, because the thing you don't want is to break down during a funeral.
Right. Yeah. No, I still don't want one, but I take the point.
Yeah, plus with most coach-built cars, if you have like a Maserati coach-built one-off, it'll cost you lots of millions. But these probably cost you maybe a couple of grand, but you've got a one-off custom coach-built car. A lot of work went into these. Well, I say that, there's a lot of them are built up north in the 70s, so they're a little bit dodgy around the areas.
Crusty?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, they're interesting.
So if people want to find out more about the club, where can they contact you?
We're just on Facebook at the minute, Classic Funeral Vehicles. We've got about 7,000 members on there, which is surprising for hearses and limos. But again, that shows you the demand for them. There's other pages on Facebook. Yeah, but you find us on Facebook and we'll help you out with any needs or buying and selling hearses. We've had a lot of people this weekend wanting to sell someone and to buy some, or just generally want knowledge about the cars.
So, yeah. I presume you can also help out if you need a joke about it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we all light-hearted. We're not a bit goff and serious. We do have a laugh and we just use them as cars. But it's an amazing amount of people out there, same as us. You wouldn't think it, but there's a lot of us out there. A bit strange.
And I think this will amuse Tony, is what we've just seen on the back door here. Lean in and see what it says on that little button there, Tony.
Yes, it's on the back,
Of the hearse.
Emergency door release.
Presumably just in case anyone got trapped in there. And
you never know. Might have a little knock there. Trying to get out.
Tony's running across the MGX Power Club stand like he's Challenge Annika or something. Look at him go. Oh, he's found someone.
Yeah, come on. Come on. That was a nice way you dodged that.
It was a swear, wasn't it?
Come on,
man. She's a big movie star.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We will be in a minute.
Yeah, this is Car Chum Podcast.
How are you doing?
And you are?
Gareth Hawkins.
Gareth, and we're standing in front of MGX Powers.
SVs.
SVs.
Yeah, and that's mine there.
Okay. Right, what is an SV? Because I call them X-Power, that's wrong then, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
So they're known as SV, so you've got three models in SV. So you've got SV, SVR, and SVS.
Oh, okay. Right.
Okay, so most people know them as an SV.
Right, it's an SV. I've learned something, Mike. Right, this was the last iteration of MG's newest
model, yeah. So it came from a car was formerly known as a Mangusta or Cavalli, and then MG Sport and Racing bought out Cavalli in Italy, and then this car was redeveloped by Peter Stevens.
Okay, so rear wheel drive, front engine?
Rear wheel drive, so SV has a 4.6 V8, SVR has a 5 litre V8, and SVS is a 4.6 supercharged V8.
Okay. These weren't engines developed by Morris Garages,
So they're Ford Cobra engines. And then they were shipped in, they're known as the longest production line in the world. Because the bodies, what are carbon fibre, were made in the Isle of Wight, put in fridges and sent to Italy, and then the body was married with the chassis, and then it then went to Coventry from Italy. So the engine came from America, then it got painted in Coventry, and then it went to Longbridge for final trimming. So it's known as a 1,000-mile production line.
Yeah, they'd already done. They're only nicely run in. But you say they were put in fridges. They don't miss it.
Yeah, because the carbon fibre.
Oh.
So when they get made in the carbon fibre, to the point where they get prepared for paint, they have to put in fridges. They have to get cool.
Wow.
To get them to Italy, so they were put inside fridges and sent over.
Okay.
The funny part is we don't know if any meat was put in when it come back from Italy.
The absolute madness of the things that we do and we did in the car industry.
Definitely,
in the UK
was
absolutely extraordinary, just to be able to turn out what was, and I'm not running your car down, what was frankly a second-hand design anyway.
It was, So if you look at the Cavalli, I mean, the chassis is really the only part of a Cavalli what's left in it. And obviously the use of the engine, the whole body was just redesigned by Peter Stevens. But the cars are made up so the heater system's Maserati, Ferrari ball joints.
Be honest with me, and this is something most people struggle with their own car. Give it a rating out of 10.
What, as in drive or...?
Everything, just to own it.
It's a fantastic car to drive. It's better than what you think it was with an MG badge on it. And for looks, you get a lot of people ask about it. I could drive a Ferrari and probably get a lot more attention in this. But no, I'd give it a good rating of 10, really, for
10
how good
out of
it
10.
Is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Honestly, if you drove one, you'd be very surprised how it drives. And it doesn't rattle and it doesn't squeak and, you know, they are reliable. There's only 83 in existence.
I was going to say, they must be pretty rare. We've got four here.
83 in existence. There's about 20 SVRs ever made. And there's only just less than 30 in the UK. There's four got written off, we think.
Okay.
We say we think because certain chassis, we just can't track them where they are, because some disappeared off to Japan and different places in the world, and we don't even know if they still exist anymore.
So if you've got one sat in your garage for 20 years, get in touch with the MGS.
Get in touch with the MGS.
Could be sitting on a small fortune, or at least a whole new group of friends.
You know, when they went into administration, bearing in mind, so these cars started from 68,000.
Wow.
When it went into administration, you could pick one up for about 20,000, 25,000. These cars are going at 50,000, 60,000 for an SVR, so they're coming back up in their values.
Wow.
Well, best of luck. Enjoy your 10 out of 10.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name's Tony, from the Car Chum podcast. And you don't have cars here. You've got vans and commercials. Now, we don't do much on them, so I don't know much about them. Tell us what's on your stand and who you are.
I do. I'm Ray Heritz from Stafford. I brought a few vans and a little lorry to the show. They've all been done by ourselves, all hand-painted.
What's the attraction? A lot of people go for the bright green Triumph TR6. Why the brown van, hand-painted in beige?
The livery is, my uncle had a haulage firm in the Browns years ago, and when I did my first lorry, I did it in the Browns, and he said, "Oh, you've done such a good job, put your own name on it." So that's what I did. And the maroon ones, because we've got a small workshop, a garage, we've always had a red van. So we've done all the maroon ones to match the garage.
So I recognise we're looking at a Morris Minor van behind you, but what's the one over this side? That's a Morris commercial?
It's a Morris J. It's a JB.
And that's a breakdown wagon.
Oh, this one, 1950, that one is. That's Bedford.
Oh, fantastic. And you've driven them down here today?
We'll be driving out as well tonight,
Oh, brilliant.
5 o'clock, we'll be pole position.
Mike.
Yeah?
To the right.
Oh.
It's an MG. It's
one of those.
SVR, what I call an X Power.
Oh, there's only 83 of those, I believe.
No, 79. I think they're missing four.
Well, that might be one of them.
Missing three.
Yeah. Do you think that was kept in a fridge?
Mike, what is this?
I'm guessing this is a Nissan Laurel or Cedric 300, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think we need to describe it visually.
Imagine the Nissan Bluebird, but very, very posh. Slightly bigger. In fact, let's find an owner and get them to describe exactly what it is.
Imagine the car that your four-year-old son has drawn on a piece of paper. That's
we're on
the
Nissan 300C Owners Club stand. Let's see if we can find a willing victim.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. Don't look too scared. This is the Car Chum podcast. Come to see you because of your vehicle choice, which is alternative.
We love these cars. We don't know much about them. Do you own one of the cars here? Is one of them yours? This one.
Silver one.
Brilliant. So exactly what is it?
It's a Nissan 300C, which was made from 84 to 87. They stopped making them after 87 and they brought out the Laurel instead.
Okay. What was the sort of market for it at the time? What would have been an equivalent sort of Granada?
Granadas, yeah. Toyota Crowns was around at the same time. But if you look inside the motors, there are a lot more that's been put into the cars than you did on the English-built stuff. Like the Granadas and stuff.
So this was Japan only?
This was Japan. Well, that was brought over from Japan, until they opened the Sunderland branch.
What's the appeal of the car for you?
Well, we've had people in the club that's actually had these. They've looked around to get Mercedes and Jags and stuff like that, but they've always come back to the 300C. Can't find anything as comfortable.
They drive nicely as well.
Very nice, yeah.
What's the engine in these? A 3 litre?
3 litre, fuel injected, V6. Very smooth. You have to rev it every now and then to make sure it's still running.
Can I just get your name as well, sir?
My name's Andy. Yeah, I'm the chairman.
That's brilliant. Thanks for your time. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
It's not just
old here, Mike, and I'm not talking about you.
Yeah, I was waiting for that. Thanks, Tony. Yeah.
There's new as well. In fact, so new that it's a concept on the TR register stand, the very eye-catching TR25 concept.
Yeah, this is an electric car, and this is perhaps the one instance where I'm going to say electric and nice in the same sentence. Because what we're looking at here is, as you say, the TR25, which is a modern imagining of the classic TR23 shape. It's really quite stunning.
In fact, they've parked it next to us, behind red ropes and sitting on blue carpet. It's next to the very first Triumph TR, the TR2. And this had just an opening for one person to sit in to keep it aerodynamic, no mirrors or anything.
Well, that's actually quite a special car as well. That's the Jabach speed record-breaking car, the Triumph TR2, that did just under 125 miles an hour. Again, an impressive car.
Nothing scary about that at all, I'm sure.
Which one would you take home? One of the two, new or old?
I love elements of the new one. The wheels are fascinating in their design. Difficult to describe, really. Best to look at a picture. The headlights, likewise, very modern LED items.
But evocative of the original TRs.
Yeah, it is. I'm not answering the question, really. The old is so charming, though. On this occasion, Mike, I would take the old, and I'm going to take the opposite view to normal.
That's interesting, because so am I, because I would go with the new. I have nothing at all against the old one, but the Jabach speed record car is a unique car. I would be frightened to own it, whereas the new one, at least, is a unique car that I feel I could drive about. But both beautiful cars, and, yeah, either one I'd be happy with.
And that's how it ends every year. Every hall with every horn and siren. I think I'll let this play out, Car Chums. NEC Classic Motor Show Special. If you've got a second, give us a like and a subscribe on the socials. Much appreciated. Just search Car Chum. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back as normal in a fortnight. Oh, and if you stay till the very end of this, there's one more line. Pip, pip.
Any idea what that means, Mike?
A bit of a traffic jam, I think.